wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Not in the new basement studio by the lake. We have fallen into a pattern of recording remotely, but I don't think it's affected the quality of the show.
Well, it's been a while since I've actually listened to it, so I'm not sure. You know, I did have complaints about my audio earlier on when I was the remote one. Like, you sounded much better because you're speaking directly into the soundboard, whereas mine is coming through the internet.
I was under the assumption I have cured that in post-production by using different mixing techniques.
It might be. The one thing I was going to mention is I think I saw something that said Skype is they're ending support for Skype, which is we're using here still because, you know, we're from 1998 or something. Like that. I don't know when Skype come out, but we may have to make a switch to Zoom or something like that.
Okay. Well, we actually could do it in the same studio, although.
Well, that's that. But I mean, the thing is, you know, this is the whole reason we haven't gotten together. It's like, it's not that it's actually it's more work for more time for you because you come over here, but even so, just like meeting in person is much more like, oh, we're gonna have a whole discussion, you know, we sit around, like, it just ends up burning more day on the weekend.
Yeah, that's true. That, but I do enjoy the being in the studio.
Oh yeah.
And next time I come, I will arrive in my new pickup truck. Well, not new.
Have you actually gotten it?
I am now a proud owner of a 2011 GMC Sierra.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's a regular cab, long bed. It's a truck. It's an old-fashioned truck. And I had to hunt high and low for an old-fashioned pickup truck.
And you need this for, what is it you need it for again?
Hauling stuff.
Yeah, hauling stuff to and from your no-backyard
home. Just around. Just around.
Yeah.
it's a big V8, and it's got four-wheel drive. Again, things that I'm probably never going to need.
Well, the four-wheel drive, because you have... You know, same boat as me with summer tires on your car, so it's useful to have a spare car for
I put winter tires on my sports car during the winter.
Now you really don't need it. I need it.
Well, now I can. Well, there you go. The truck will be available, and people, all they got to do, because it's a V8, if you want to take up my time, you buy me a cup of coffee and you offer to fill up the gas tank. Mm-hmm. Because in this day and age, that's quite a bill, I would imagine. But yeah, I bought, and of course it was on. I actually went through the whole kerfuffle of. I haven't bought a secondhand car in over two decades.
Yeah.
So that shows, you know, you get older, you get to a certain status in life, and you're like, are you always buying a new car? So I'd kind of forgotten, just in general, about sort of the minefield that secondhand car buying can be, and I actually spent a couple of $100 on one of those independent inspectors to go out and look at the car, in this case the truck, and so far this is only day one, it has been money well spent, but the report came back and was very thorough, and you know, they test drive the vehicle, they take loads of pictures, they get underneath it, they check for this, that, and the other, they hook up their own computer if the car is of that ilk,
if you're able.
Yeah, and so, it was just interesting in shopping around for I keep saying old-fashioned, because nowadays on the road, all you see are these big sort of four-door, like they're not really trucks. They're not trucks as I think of them. They're sort of like SUVs with an open back. But you look at them and you're like, yeah, but you can't get a lot in there. Whereas I wanted a truck.
Truck. For when you're hauling a lot.
Yeah.
I'm expecting to have repeated announcements of when you actually haul anything. Because color me skeptical.
Okay, that's fine. But what I will also do, though, is inform the listener when the occasion comes, when you call me and go, oh, what are you doing Sunday? I might need a hand with whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because you no longer have... You used to have that old Highlander, didn't you? But you got rid of that.
I did. And now we just have an old Cross Tour, which is... slightly smaller in the back, but that will be its usefulness, four-wheel drive and all that jazz.
Yeah.
We do have a couple things to bring to the dump that I think I can do in the Cross Tour. But
why? Why do it in the Cross Tour
when
you can say, hey, Zeph, what are you doing? Do you want to go at a dump? And now I'm still at the stage with this vehicle, whereas it's fun. I'm there. I'm game. I'll clear some time to go at a dump. Now, if you wait 3 months, I'm going to go, yeah, what's my incentive?
Mm-hmm.
But now, I'll be like, yeah, I'll go at a dump. And here's the other thing. whoever owned this truck before, performance is the wrong word, but it came up in the report. Whoever the owner was, they'd put on one of those mufflers that makes a whole load of noise. So it sounds like when I just sort of chug around the neighborhood, you can hear me coming. And I'm like, yeah, this is great.
Okay. By the way, we should mention to everybody, in case they were wondering about the sound, that Zeph is apparently suffering from some allergies.
Serious allergies the last 2 days. I think it's allergies. I don't know if it's cold. I think it's allergies. And so I've had an extremely runny nose and the sniffles, and I have taken things to stop my nose running and then had to take things to stop me being congested. It's this weird, like...
Why don't you just take anti-allergy type meds like Zyrtec or...
I took Allegra today.
Allegra, okay. Yeah, so
The only reason I say it must be allergies is that the rest of my body feels fine. Like, it doesn't feel like a cold. And then when I went to my weather app on my phone, Let me open.
No, it's definitely hot because it's been windy and not raining at all for the past few days. And so this is definitely tree pollen season.
Yeah. And so I went to Weatherbug. I have Weatherbug on my phone. And when I went to Weatherbug, the warning that it is a high alert pollen day, I'm like, got to be allergies. So please excuse me if. So here we go. Perhaps whoever complained to you about the audio, well, you can text or email us and complain about my audio. Yeah, you sounded terrible.
You can imagine what it's like with you know, because I have my headphones on for this sort of thing, where you're like, you're right in my ears. So
okay.
I get up close and personal here.
All right.
Also, what are you wearing there? Is a shirt or jacket that looks like the logo for the movie theater? Oh, no, it says Titans.
It says Titans, and it seems to have like a, you know, the Greek, the dude with the funny helmet.
It looks like the logo for that Mosaic movie theater, which I think is like a small chain. I think they have New York outfits. But anyway, once you said it's not a Titan.
Well, why do you have that? You've mentioned that movie theater. Did you want to go out of schedule and start with movies?
No.
Because we have some topics to cover, but none of them really thematically connected. We are going to talk. We are going to have a discussion with someone about April Fool's Day, which just passed. We're going to talk about the World Cup draw, and we are going to talk about Oscars. Why don't we stick to the schedule and start with April Fool's?
That's right. I thought for a while, like, is there an April Fool's thing we could do? But that doesn't really work for us because people, I mean, first of all, it's already April 3rd. And then when people actually listen to it, it won't be April Fool's. So it's not much of a joke to pull as a podcaster of an April Fool's thing.
I have two April Fool's comment. One I'll get into shortly. But the first one is I found this year, I'm not a big April Fool's person. I'm not a big prankster. So if you attempted to sort of prank me, I wouldn't go, oh, that's clever. I'd actually get irritated and angry. I'm not. So again, if you're out there and you know me, you know the way to get under my skin is to April Fool's prank me. And if you are someone looking to get under my skin, well, you've got 360 days to think up how to get under my skin. I'm not a big prankster in that way. And I did find this year there did seem to be a paucity of pranks, maybe just because with everything going on in the world, I don't know.
Well, it is not enough personal interaction. What I find is now what's happened is that the standard prank is like a product joke. Like, I'm looking at a website talking about, like, Yingling put up a prank saying they were starting to make a soap that was like Yingling scented or something. Well, it's, you know, whatever. The University of Virginia put out a tweet saying that they were bringing back a mascot that a few years ago got roundly condemned. It was this like blue fuzzy horse and was designed to appeal to the kids. They said, oh, we're bringing him back this year. And a few people that I knew fell for it. And then they said, no, that's a big joke, but it's really not that funny a joke.
I can imagine there may have been a whole load of people going to their Zoom meetings if they're still working from home. And some bright spark was like, why aren't you guys in the office? You didn't hear we're all supposed to be back in the office.
Yeah, right.
Right? Yeah, I don't know.
Hilarity ensues.
Yeah, no. So I did have one prank. Not a prank.
Sure what's going on now.
Well, I'm going to put the boot into my wife. She tried to convince me that she heard something yesterday. And, of course, I understand that by the time you listen to this, April 1st is long gone. But yesterday, as we speak, was not April 1st. It was after April 1st. She tried to convince me that the radio had told her that the Washington Post was ceasing its print edition in 2 weeks and were going to be digital only. And of course, I challenged her, which didn't go down very well. She was like, I heard it on the radio. So I even went to that radio station's website, being a news channel, mm-hmm. and they had no mention of it. And I'm like, you have been pranked. And she's like, they were talking about this morning. I go, it doesn't matter. You've still been pranked. Because I did actually take a moment to Google Washington Post, you know, no longer in circulation.
Yeah, I went to check, too, when you said it, because I was like, well, that'd be annoying, because I still read the actual paper. I get it delivered and everything.
Yeah. And my first thought was, well, how am I going to do the crossword? Because I don't read a paper anymore.
I know people do crosswords on their phone, but it's got to be really annoying. You got to probably do a lot of scrolling back and forth or something complicated one.
Yeah. That was the only sort of April Fool's sort of prank that I was aware of.
April Fool's? You thought April Fool's was going to be funny, but it wasn't.
No. I was telling my partner in the green room before that back in the United Kingdom, there is, I think it is still on, there is a news magazine show called Panorama, which is sort of 60 minutes-ish in its heft, although mm-hmm. it tends to do sort of longer pieces. But it is very sort of, I don't want to say highbrow is the wrong word, but like, for example, things like 2020 and Dateline, they're not highbrow to me. Every week you just turn it on and it's the discussion of, you know, the doctor that murdered his wife or some such thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not news shows in the way that 60 Minutes is a news show. Anyway, back in the 70s, early 70s, Panorama were famous for, on a show that aired on April Fool's Day, they aired a whole 15-minute segment about the spaghetti farms of Italy. Mm-hmm. And they had all this sort of phony footage. Because, again, as I was explaining to my partner, you know, if you grew up at that time, spaghetti was something that came in boxes or in tins. And if you grew up in like early 70s Britain,
you might not have known it was.
Well, no, and Italy was some super far off exotic place. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing how many people actually bought this notion that, oh my God, spaghetti comes, they grow spaghetti. Yeah. They actually believed it. And that came down to the source, which was this show Panorama in a country that only had three TV stations at that time.
I'm sorry, did you just say it came down to the sauce?
Oh, very good, yes.
It sounded a lot like that with the allergies there.
So anyway, that's a little history of April Fool's.
I'm having a beer. I don't know if you noticed, I was having a beer here on our podcast.
Yeah, I did see.
But you weren't ready for it. There's a, I don't know if you've been yet, there's over Capital One built this whole new development, and up on top of one of their buildings, which is 11 stories high, they have like a whole garden, beer garden area, place for bands, place for kids to play like bocce, and there's going to be food trucks and all this stuff. And so we went there last night, and you can get growlers of beer because the brewery is Star Hill out of Charlottesville is on top of the thing. It's very weird because it's, even though you go up the 11th floor, the way they have it set, it's not like you see down to the ground anywhere. So it really doesn't feel like you're up in the air, other than the fact that it can get kind of breezy up there at times. But it's kind of a interesting idea.
So it's a Star Hill property.
Star Hill,
but they're not brewing on site.
I think the whole thing is, it's called the Perch, and it's all really, they really probably have like a permission, or I don't know, a license would be the right word, to serve their beers. They're like the chosen concessionaire, I think, is the kind of thing. If, you know, Star Hill didn't want to do it anymore, they bring another brewery in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like their thing. It's not their place. It's like they're set up to do it. And they got food service there, but they have a stage. It's very like outdoorsy, a lot of plants around, and folks bringing their dogs. And it's, you know, like a beer garden type of thing with, you know, fun for kids stuff too.
But up on the 13th floor.
Yeah, 11th floor.
11th. So a lot of dogs in the elevator.
But I've been there twice now, and it's just like, well, you go up the elevator and you get off and you walk around, but you're never really close enough to the edge of anything to see down into anything to be like, oh, we're way up in the air. You're just up in the air.
I once went to a dinner. This is going back about 7 or 8 years, maybe a bit more than that, when I think Star Hill was sort of quite a new brewery. And I went and a rep had come, and it was one of these dinners at one of these clubs. And the rep, you know, there was a dinner and the rep would keep sort of having beers poured at your table and then talk about, you know, whatever you call it. You know, well, this is our such and
such. Tasting notes.
Yeah, that type of thing. And I thought that was, and it was obviously that they were promoting their product, but it was, you know, it was kind of interesting. It wasn't as interesting as I was fortunate enough once to have seen that guy, the beer hunter at the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. And he gave a whole presentation. He toured like Belgium and Northern France. And he gave a whole presentation about the sort of culture of that small brewery type in sort of the monasteries brewing and the monks and the abbots and all this type of stuff. And that was super interesting. Yeah. This, you know, a whole decade later was a very different sort of, you know, sort of promoting Star Hill products, but quite interesting.
Yeah, they're not bad. It's not the craziest beer, but they actually have quite a wide. I was surprised when I was there because I thought they might just have the stuff that's in the store, but they must have had like 20 taps and, you know, 15 more things in cans.
Can you take anything away when you purchase?
You know, I didn't notice. They must sell. I think like a lot of places, they are permitted to, you know, fill your growler. That's what I got this from.
Okay.
And then they have one of those crowlers, you know, where they make the 32-ounce cans out of the stuff. But they didn't seem to have the cans. And I imagine that's probably another licensing thing. Like if you are now a licensed brewery or brewery outlet, you can serve things into the growlers, but maybe you can't sell off-premises just prepackaged cans.
So what is it you have from Star Hill? What is it you took to go?
It's a fruited sour. Like they had a bunch of different sour. They actually had, last time we were there, they had like four different sour beers. This one time they only had two, and I can't remember what the fruits are in there, but yeah, it's a good light one for a Sunday afternoon.
It's good. Refreshing? Would you purchase it if you found it? Because Star Hill is now, you can find them in the grocery store.
Yeah, I would purchase it in the summertime when it's warmer. This is more just like a funsy kind of thing. It's good boat beer.
Oh, all right. So that is, and that's not an April Fool's thing, although that was at the end of our April Fool's segment.
Right. I just stuck it in there because I was drinking beer and I was trying to explain myself to you.
Also on April Fool's Day itself was the World Cup draw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which apparently went on. I had a couple of different radio stations going, plus, you know, a couple of websites with live updates, and apparently, like any of these productions, you know, the draw was about 35 minutes of musical acts and sort of, you know, kerfuffle until they actually started pulling balls with teams' names out of hats and placing them into their groups. But for, you know, the majority of the listeners of the Atlantic Voice, quite interesting group.
Yeah, I got distracted halfway through that.
Oh, okay.
Things for the next item here. What were we just talking about?
We're talking about the World Cup draw.
Oh, yeah. So for those who don't know, in fact, I was trying to look up the different draws. The way the World Cup works every 4 years, maybe you know that much of it, and the teams are in there, but because it's only got 32 slots, right?
Right.
Because they're going to be expanding to 48 the next one, I think. But yeah, 32 slots. You have to have essentially a whole elaborate multi-year play-in system. So, you know, starting 2 years before the actual tournament, they're having all of the nations can, you know, field teams. They play each other. They go to another round. And so, like, people may have seen the U.S. by not losing to Costa Rica by 6 goals made it into
the actual
World Cup. Yeah, like, so they lost, but it was 2-0 at that point. It was pretty much a lock. But anyway, so you have all these teams coming. Like, so Italy, for example, missed qualifying from Europe this year, which is the same thing they did 4 years ago.
Yes.
Even though between those two events, they won the championship of Europe, of all of Europe, against all the other countries. So it's not like they're horrible. But as a result, the draw exercises, what they take those teams, and unlike the NCAA tournament, it isn't like a straight playoff, you know, it's not one and done potentially. You put all those 32 teams into 8 groups of 4,
right?
And they all play each other in sort of a round robin. So this way, everybody's guaranteed three matches, and then the top two in each division go into a more traditional type of playoff structure where they play each other in one game and they lose. So the draw is always an interesting thing because they always talk about like the group of death, you know, like one, there's a complicated system for doing the draw so that they put people into different pots. Like, so you don't end up with a group that's going to be all the best or something like that. And then they do other things geographically so that they don't lump everybody together geographically, although it must not be too strict.
You did mention the NCAA tournament. It is seeded in the way that that tournament is seeded. It is seeded in the way that a, you know, Wimbledon or, you know, the U.S. Open tennis tournament is seeded in terms right. of, you know, I think with 32 teams, there are eight groups of four. And so basically
they'll take the top eight and they'll each go to a group.
They'll be in a group the next eight.
And putting aside all the geographic things they do for tweaking, they pick them again. So it isn't like it isn't a 1-8 and then 9 goes in the 8's group, you know, 10 goes in like the NCAA. It's
no, but
like
you're sort of banded. But to your point, though, if you're in the next group of 9-16, you will then get placed. It's still relatively random, but basically when the groups are done, you've got a top seed, sort of a group, a second tier, a third tier.
Right.
And then sort of this notion of, you know, the weakest nations in the last tier. And I do find it's in those sort of, no one ever disputes who the top seeds are, although there is one this year with it being Qatar, who are hosting the thing.
Right, yeah, whoever there gets in and they're horrible, right? Commit like yeah. they're not even
so whoever, off of the market. So whoever the host is always a top seed because they've spent gazillions of dollars building stadiums to put this thing on. But always what happens is that in groups you get sort of groups of deaths come about where there are teams that are sort of ranked lower than, you know, I guess the NCAA again is a really good example. You know, the final is Kansas, who are number one seed, against North Carolina, who are an eight seed. Yet North Carolina is sort of a traditional sort of powerhouse in college basketball. So likewise in soccer, what happens is, you know, there'll be some named countries that perhaps aren't in the best form, and they will end up in a lower pot than they kind of right. should, and then that's how you get these groups of death.
Well, and then you even have the fact that, like, right now, not all of the teams are in because there's additional games to be played.
Yes.
Like, so the team that beat the U.S. Costa Rica as actually plays New Zealand. And so basically the idea is like North – and the qualifying, by the way, is all regional. And so like North America has a – North America and Central America are in one group and South America are another group. And they get a certain number of slots in there depending upon, you know, the general ranking. So the Europeans get the most and South Americans get second most or however that works. But something relative to their number of nations they have in the first place.
Yeah.
But so Costa Rica has to go and play – New Zealand, and a winner of that goes in, but they basically put in, so like they put them in a pot, you know, there immediately. So even though like they might have different rankings, they're like whoever wins that game goes yes. into whatever group. And the interesting thing, so which gets us to US's group, the US group, because of the fact that Ukraine couldn't play one of its playoff games, or I don't even know if it's a playoff game or just a final game in the qualifying, but
they have to play. So yeah,
Ukraine
Europe,
plays yeah. Scotland.
They have to play Scotland and then they play Wales.
Yeah. The winner of that plays Wales and that's going to get into there. And that is in the US's group. So the US is going to have one of those three countries in its group. In fact, I think it's their first game. Is one of those three countries because England's first game.
Yeah,
so and England is also in the group.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's so we got England that and Iran. Like it just struck me as a very odd thing to happen by happenstance. You know, you've got, you know, this surely going to be the super underdog. You know, Ukraine. Any of those three teams would actually be considered the plucky underdog that the U.S. would root for. Ukraine, Wales, or Scotland, right. whoever got in. And then we have to play against England. Now, since two teams got out of the group, everybody's like, oh, this will work out great. The U.S. and England can get to the next round. And then Iran, who, of course, is, you know, one of the biggest enemies ever of the United
yes.
States, you know, historically and politically. So it's a very interesting sort of conglomeration of things there. So I understand England and U.S. play on the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh, so. Really?
Yeah, so that'll be, I don't know if they'll interfere. And I assume because it's, what are there, 7 hours ahead there, it's going to be, it's not going to be a late night game. It's going to be a morning or even
daytime game. What, you know, that with the exception of when the tournament is in the Far East. So even when it was in Brazil, which was two World Cups ago, it was in Brazil, which lines up, I think, with Central Time, if I'm correct. Right. Yeah. Ultimately, what they try and do is the bulk of the games, that you know, they all sort of end up at pretty much the same time of day. What I mean is, if in your time zone there is a late night game, that'll pretty much be the case all through the World Cup, because we're working on the time of the host country. But they do try and line up a couple of windows so that one game is always in sort of European prime time.
Right.
Because in reality, for soccer, that is the biggest TV market, is mainland Europe.
So actually, when you think about it, so England, U.S. will probably be...
Probably three in the afternoon here, I would imagine.
It'd be like... seven, I forget at that time of year if it'll be a 6 or 7 hour difference, whatever it'll be. So,
but I also don't know.
Before everybody goes home for Thanksgiving is always looking for stuff to do with the family when you like run out of conversation. This should be a little interesting event. We can all watch World Cup soccer.
Well, I do want to say this, and I did tell you in the email that I have a big podcasting announcement, but I will come to that later.
Obviously,
the World Cup, if you're sitting at home and you half follow this stuff, you're sitting there going, isn't the World Cup normally in the summer? Well, normally it's supposed to be in the summer, but because it's in Qatar, we will all end up with the correct pronunciation nearer the time, I would imagine. Because it was originally slated for the summer, but because it's so hot in the summer, for the first time ever, the World Cup is taking place in December. So that's why... there is going to be, well, you're going to have a choice on a Sunday afternoon whether to watch the NFL or potentially a World Cup game.
Well, right. Oh, on a Sunday. Right. Not the game we were just talking about, although there'll be games then too.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting, you know. I mean, it's kind of like, even though it's sort of weird, it's sort of interesting. You know, I think, you know, as the tech person, don't you have like a mute button for these things?
I do, but I had so much sort of allergy inspired sort of reaction, I didn't have time to reach for the mute button.
So, you know, that's anyway, I don't know. What's your announcement? I mean, your other podcasting buddy is not in on the announcement, but
no, because I'm about to make it now. Is that I've had this conversation, and I meant to do it when the World Cup was in the summer, and it would have been easy then. I have, and because we didn't do a New Year's resolution show, this was sort of going to be my resolution, is that during the World Cup, for the 32 days. Mm-hmm. So basically starting the day before, running all the way until the day after. And I'm trying to do the math. I will record every evening for 15 minutes to release a pod overnight during the World Cup. And I might have people on if I get really desperate, and it might just be me talking or calling people up. And it's basically... it is centered on the World Cup, but it will not be about soccer. And that is all I'm going to say.
Could you do it live and then just put the recording in?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to do it to release it at an hour, because it is only going to be 15 minutes.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if you set it up, like, I don't mean it would be only live. I'm just saying, as long as you're recording something that's supposed to be timely and quick, rather than people have to wait for it to come out as a recording, couldn't you just stream it and then take that stream and make it into a release?
My plan is to basically do it if there are three games in a day, and the last game tends to be, if you're here on the east coast of the US, the last game tends to finish around 6 o'clock. Now, when the World Cup was in Brazil, they did have a whole load of late games. I say late, I mean late back in Europe, where you had to watch the game at midnight back in Europe. We did have a number of games that finished at 8 o'clock in the evening. So I don't know from the Middle East what times it's going to be. Because obviously, at local time, they still want games to be played when locals are going to go and watch it, right? Do you see what I'm saying?
Sure. Which part of this is a response to my comment?
Well, we're going to explain.
Live.
I'm going to record after the last game of the day and then have it up there so that people listen to it potentially before they can listen to it any time before the next day's games go.
Okay, let me try this one more time. Why not just stream it while you're recording it so people can tune in?
Yes, I might. I might do that. Yes.
And then release the recorded. Yeah, well,
if I can figure out how to do that, we will do that too. But it's going to be a limited series. We're going to be exhausted. Well, but I've always wanted to do it. And let me give you let me tell you what one of the inspirations was.
Hopefully you don't have allergies then.
No, well, I hope not either. Remember during the last World Cup? Well, there was right at the same time during the World Cup, that was when all those kids were trapped in those in the cave in Thailand. And so every day for like 2 weeks, you turn on the news and it would be an update on their condition. And I just thought, because the World Cup is this sort of finite period, it'd be interesting to just pod every day, and who knows what the world will give us to talk about. And if nothing else, you talk about the games.
Well, if you don't talk about the games, I'm not sure.
That's because something else exciting is going on. I just thought it was interesting. Like, there was that dual narrative within the media of sort of World Cup time where, and I will, and this is one of the things I am going to talk about. I've already planned about 6 or 7 shows. I have a show to talk about what I think are some of the best books ever about soccer. I have a show with full of facts about the history of the World Cup. You know, just so that anyone can like, hey, it's 10-15 minutes while you're going to work. That is my plan. Yeah. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that I kept thinking, well, there's some real fuel for something there, that you're in this sort of artificial World Cup time, and then there was this real life event occurring which sort of had a rightly or wrongly, had this sort of media timetable with it as well. Day 12 of the trapped kids. I'm not wishing that a whole load of people are in distress, you know, to give me something to talk about. It just made me think,
things that make you go,
Yeah. So that's a big announcement.
I like that. I would like to... Which side would you like to wager that you actually stay below or above 10 or 15 minutes, whatever this time?
Let me wait to see. Come August and September, which will be a couple of months before the World Cup, I will have sort of skeleton. I currently have a skeleton set of shows of things to talk about.
Yeah.
And so...
You know, I know you have a betting system for other things.
Yes.
I think I have a betting system for if Zeff ever says he's going to do something in a certain amount of time, take the over.
All right. Well, we're going to leave that out there. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's probably a legit. That's probably a legit wager to take. Yeah.
Exactly.
But that said, it will be interesting if you do this every day. 15 minutes suddenly might seem an awful long time.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. You'll have to use the other things because, I mean, you could talk about the games, but if you literally just talked about the games...
Yeah, who wants to listen to that?
People would be very bored of that.
Yeah, who wants to listen to that? Yeah. So anyway, this is a big announcement. It will run on the website.
When's the opening match?
Well, I don't know. I've got to do all that research. I've been researching shows. Because the draw was only the other day.
At the end of November, like the last... Second to last week of November.
I mean,
if they do the first match on a weekend, right? So it's probably the Saturday or Sunday before.
Well, what I'm saying is if England-Iran is slated for the Friday and we are Group B, then it sounds to me... No.
It's England-US is slated for the Friday.
Oh, I'm sorry. I would imagine that it's going to begin...
And that's our second match, so it's probably 2 weeks before that.
I would imagine it's going to begin maybe the Friday the week prior.
Right. Okay.
Because what I'm saying is... Normally they always have the first couple of games on a Friday and they just start in group order. So group A and B play. So what I'm saying is if the second game is the following Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving, then it sounds like they're going to begin mid-November, like the 14th or the 15th. Because they try and put teams on, you know, basically within the tournament, you're sort of playing once every 5-6 days. And that's why you get during the group stage, you get like, you know, you get 20 days in a row of just games. And then obviously, because when you get into the knockout, you need to factor in rest. There are a couple of gaps where there are rest days and stuff like that.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and be your research department, because okay. It's not like they don't know exactly when these games are. So I'm just going to go ahead and look it up for everybody if they have the benefit of this. Monday, November 21st is the first games.
Really? A Monday? So there you go. That's going to be interesting to talk about, too. It's the first time ever the games have started on a Monday.
Yeah, they don't seem to have a lead-in game. Like, the first Monday game is Qatar and Ecuador.
Well, that makes sense. The host normally plays quite... Right. The host plays first. Used to be back in the day that the defending champion played first. Because back in the day, the defending champion always got a bye into the next one. Although that's now gone out the window. So the only team, you know, to bring it back to where we started, the only team in the draw that didn't have to qualify was the host, because the host always gets in because they foot the bill for the whole thing.
Yeah, and if anybody's curious, as long as I'm here, I will tell you that the window of broadcast is 5 a.m. first game, 8 a.m. second game, 11 a.m. third game, 2 p.m. This is all Eastern time. Fourth game each day. So
they're doing four games a day. That is a new thing.
Yeah, A, A, B. Yeah. Wow. Maybe that's why. Maybe they're compressing it that way.
Yeah.
Because normally it would be three, right?
Well, because there is, you know, I don't want to. We're not just.
In fact, I can even tell you, England, United States is at 2 p.m. on the day after Thanksgiving.
2 p.m. here.
Yeah, Eastern.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is, there is, it's interesting from a sort of a scheduling perspective. You know, they schedule games obviously to make things easier in the host country. Because, you know, I mean, again, you know, who would go to an NCAA game that tipped off at 2:30 in the morning, right? So they have to make it work there. But then realistically, this is a television event. They got to make it work.
Yeah, no, as many people as possible you want to sweep into there, and the ones that have paid the most for the rights probably.
Right, and so that there's the other really, and they also do their best to attempt to make attractive matchups.
Right,
they'll fiddle around with it a little bit.
Right.
I'm actually kind
of impressed that all this information came out. So, like, the draw was then. It would seem to me like, just like a lot of these things, you know, they'd tell you the draw was then, and they would hedge their bets, and like with these playing games, they would just wait and wait and wait. But I guess... that people want certainty, I guess. You know, they're going to be booking some fancy hotel rooms in Qatar. They got to make sure that you tell them what time they're going to games, what time they have to come into the country.
Well, yeah, and again, I mean, I think this is the one tidbit that I know will be discussed to death is I didn't realize that the nation of Qatar is 35 miles across, apparently.
Yeah, it's all
like it's tight. City, it's basically having this is going to be more like the Olympics, where everything goes on in one space.
That's
so
true.
That would be interesting thing. I mean,
yeah, it would be kind of cool.
Yeah. So anyway, that is the World Cup, and the World Cup draw was this week, and I guess that brings us timely to another event that occurred, the Oscars. Did you watch the Oscars this year?
We did. In this household, we do watch the Oscars on a regular basis. We've missed a few over the years, but it's a nice... we used to watch red carpet stuff beforehand, just kind of get a kick out of things. But for whatever reason, that stuff's gotten more and more boring.
The red carpet stuff. I'm the same way in our house. I'm not as a religious watcher. Like, I'll have it on.
Yeah.
And some years I'm paying more attention than others.
And I can't tell if what's happened is that the broadcast itself has gotten worse, more like... Like, you used to have Joan Rivers making comments about people's outfits and, like, kind of, like, a little bit more fun. And now they act like they're having fun, but it's just basically butt-kissing the entire time.
It is, isn't it?
And,
it's all,
and
like,
everybody's sort of got these
PR
they make their stop there, and their PR person steering them there. And it was looser before. And, well, speaking of loose, you know, like, lack of control of things, of course, to what we were mostly going to talk about. So we did watch it, but we'll come back to what we're mostly going to talk about, which everybody knows by now, the slap. But we watch it here, and we usually do, like, a bunch of appetizer-type foods.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, and so you can kind of just graze over the course of the evening and overeat on a slow, protracted basis instead of a one lump sum basis kind of thing. So we did that. And so, like, when – I mean, I, obviously everybody's going to know we're talking about when Will Smith slapped Chris Rock across the face. And then, you know, in the U.S. it was all not bleeped out, but like the whole thing went silent. And so it was really kind of confusing because you couldn't tell if this was a shtick or what it was.
I thought it was shtick myself.
Yeah. Well, when we saw it, like and even the way the slap happened, the way the camera shot was there, it just looked like, well, this had to be staged. And the fact that Chris Rock basically
then presented an award.
He took it. Like, yeah. You know, it wasn't like he wasn't his hand in his face, like rubbing it or something like that. But so we were watching it and I was like, Wait, what happened here? Oh, by the way, I should say we usually delay it a little bit so you can take some of the ads out. So we, in theory, if it had happened early in the broadcast, we might not have caught it live
because
behind by 5 or 10 minutes or something like that. But this time it's towards the end of the broadcast, and so we saw that and we're like, oh my goodness! And so of course I immediately run to Twitter, you know, to start seeing what people are saying, and then somebody had the Australian feed where it had all the audio wasn't cut, you know, at all, so you could actually hear what everybody was saying.
The Australian and the Japanese feed, and I cannot decide whether it's interesting. Those are two countries, if you sort of do the time, you know, we've just been talking about the World Cup game times, like they probably have live feeds and they're probably not paying any of it too much attention, because in reality, who has time getting ready to go to work on a Monday morning to sit and watch the Oscars live? So there's probably slightly less
vigilance.
Yes.
Or maybe it's considered like, you know, feed, in the rules, like, and it's like, I don't even know if these still exist, but in the U.S. it used to be if the broadcast was like before 9 p.m., it had one set of standards. If it was after 9 p.m., it would be a different set of standards. But
I know I've said this before many years ago, and we've talked about the Oscars, but it's funnily enough, when we were talking earlier about the show Panorama doing the big black and white feature on growing spaghetti. Well, back in, you know, when I was but a callow youth, we didn't actually get the Oscars live. You got it the next night, and they'd already edited it down to like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And so it's interesting. It is. I mean, I'm not going to lie, before we get back into obviously the highlight of the show, last year I didn't watch it at all. Because it was the, you know, they weren't having a ceremony. Like there weren't really many movies. So I didn't pay any attention. But I did have it on again. And in our household, we pretty much stayed with it nonstop for the 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I'd forgotten what hard work, just as a TV show, that thing can be.
Well, it's what you need is appetizers.
Yeah, no, I know. And I'd eat my dinner beforehand. So I was just sitting there
sleepy, drinking
tea. I had forgotten. Just as a TV show, and I know they were making a big hoo-ha this year about giving out some awards before, and there were clearly some awards where the people just sort of arrived on the stage and they were right there. And
I'm sitting there thinking, weird. I couldn't quite figure that part out, but
I've suddenly realized though, it was still 3.5 hours.
No, yeah, it didn't get any shorter.
No, and that's because there's just too much stick. There's too many comedians doing stuff, but I can't decide. I sort of try to take this opinion that if you got rid of all the shtick, you know, the prepackaged bits or the intros or whatever, well, that would lose you 35 to 40 minutes. Yeah. But then I'm starting to think, I don't know. What are you left with?
It would just swell and fill the other. Like, you know, I think they don't need to do the entire songs of the nominees. Like, you know, think about the things are nominated. You got a quick scene of the best actor nominee, quick scene of this stuff. So why? I mean, I get the fact that, oh, it's supposed to be sort of a variety show, but I don't really need to see a 4 or 5 minute song performed live in order to get that piece of the movie piece. It's not even that important a part of the movie for me, you know. So I think they could cut that back. Maybe they could just abbreviate the songs a little bit.
How did you feel? I must say, I wasn't, you know me, I always look forward to the dead people montage.
I was about to say, In Memoriam, like, sort of snuck up on me. Like, I didn't, like, all of a sudden, because people were talking, and I was like, oh, wait, they're doing the In Memoriam thing.
It snuck up on me, and they were given just as much play to, they had live acts singing and doing stuff.
Right. Well, they had, like, these individuals coming in and saying special things. I can't remember, there was one person in the latter part of it, I said, that person really deserved, like, a more special treatment. You know, they were just kind of amongst the list of producers and stuff like that. Nobody cares about.
Like, it was interesting. So it seemed more of a thing. And I felt like, because I like, and again, these things are all personal taste. As a, maybe a lapsed cinephile is the best way to describe myself.
Mm-hmm.
I like sitting in the In Memoriam and going, oh my gosh, he passed away. Yeah. Oh, wow. Like it, like you sit there and it sort of pushes buttons in your memory of, oh my God, I remember that movie type thing. And I did find it slightly distracting this year, having the camera panning over people singing live and then sort of random stars coming up to say a tribute. I'm like, no, no, no. You guys are all making too much noise. I just want to see the photos of the people.
Right, right. Cause
it's also part.
Give me clips of them in the movies. I don't need to see you saying a testimonial. I'd rather have you know, 15 seconds of them saying that iconic line or whatever it is they had.
Yeah. And I felt like I felt like it sort of took away from it a little bit. I don't know. I don't mean that in a way that it wasn't respectful. I just felt like, well, no, I am going to say this. I think if you watch the Oscars, if you're still what that thing now tends to come sort of about 40 minutes from the end. So it sort of signifies.
Yeah. Turning the corner towards the home stretch. Kind
of thing. It's like, okay, this is the fourth quarter now. It's nothing but big awards all the way out. I feel like if you've hung in this show for that long, then you're into the movies at some level. Yeah. And yet I found like it was now with all this other stuff going on to make it seem less solemn and more celebratory. I kind of felt like there were too many dudes who was just a photo in the background that just came and went. Like, I still remember, like, William Hurt was on screen for like half a second.
Yeah.
Now, well, that's a dude who's won Oscars.
That's the, and then maybe that's the one I'm thinking of, because I was like, well, you know, you're giving us nothing.
Excuse me. Yeah. Oh, William Hurt. That's it.
And at least they could do for like the when they put up so-and-so producer, but what they produce.
Right.
Like, give me a list, like give me a clip of whatever their best movie they produced was.
Yeah. And then you go, oh, wow. Probably, he had something to do with all the President's Men.
This gets into our discussions of obituaries and how like they may be different. It seems like they're different. And I can't tell if that's what people want to see or it's just because there are more people involved in more things. And probably 20 years ago, the people that were passing were the earliest producers when there was like five major producers, like it's not that there were less movies, but there was more centralized control.
Right.
Now we're probably getting into the point where anybody who's got a few bucks can end up listed as a producer of a movie because they put money up, you know, kind of thing. So we're going to get a bunch of those type of quickies. So they need some cutoff. But anyway.
I don't know. I just found it was a very, I don't know. Like you said, it seemed to stick. It seemed to, because I remember they had trailed it going into a couple of commercial breaks,
mm-hmm.
you know, like they said, coming up in the next segment. And they had sort of trailed it for the prior half hour. But you're right. When it started, I'm like, oh, it's some other musical act. And then after about 10 seconds, I'm like, oh, Christ, it's the In Memoriam. I like this bit. Yeah. I'm supposed to be paying attention.
Yeah.
They all, yeah, very under, oh, I don't know.
So back to the slap. So I, you know, like, so, okay, initial reaction was, okay, that's weird. This is some sort of scam. Another part, and then it was sort of like, I think maybe because that's where my head was at first, it was, I won't say I was being forgiving of it, of him slapping him, but I was like, well, you know, it just didn't seem as big a deal because I still probably part of my head was coming, like, thinking, well, it wasn't really real, you know, like it was. And, you know, a lot of folks have been, I'm going to come around to the position that most people seem to be taking, but like a lot of folks seem to be saying, you know, they should take whatever it is, but it was a crappy joke. I don't mean like a super mean joke, but it was a crappy joke. Like, and it was like, first of all, like nobody even, a lot of people wouldn't even get it. Like, you know, G.I. Jane, like, you know, it's just,
yeah, it wasn't a very funny joke.
Yeah. Like, and it's not like really, you cut your hair short, you know, whatever, like kind of joke. And I don't know whether he knew she had like a disorder, the alopecia that everybody's talking about now. And okay, it's making fun of a disability. But regardless, it's just lame. It's a little bit lame. But so the fact that then it gets, but then it was like after you started to think about it, you're like, no, that's really screwed up. Like you can't go hitting people because they make bad jokes about somebody in your family. And you sure can't do it in the front of TV and all this stuff. Even if you sat in your seat and you yelled, then it'd be something, you know, like you'd be like, okay, you know, inappropriate, but it's yelling. You know, it's all words. It's not, you can't just go up and hit people because you feel like it.
Well, I had a couple of thoughts about, I tended to take a slightly sort of, I came at it from sort of the rules of the entertainment industry perspective. And I will say this, my joke is, you can see why Will Smith didn't win an Oscar for Ali, because he would have knocked Chris Rock down if he was a good actor. Boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
I had one question. The Oscars is a, we've spent 10 minutes talking about the Oscars, the television show. And every time announcers come out, actors, it's amazing how bad actors who perform for a living can be when they haven't bothered to learn their lines and they're just reading it from an auto cue. Do you know, like, you see actors come out and they're trying to be funny and it's like, did you dudes not rehearse? This is just kind of awkward. This isn't funny at all. This must be what you're like in real life. So my question is, for a TV show that is a full-on production, did people not proofread that joke beforehand?
Yeah.
That's my point here too. And so while everyone wants to say, well, you know, it's not, yeah, is it a great joke? No. Is it a tasteful joke? Probably not. But A, I can't believe Chris Rock just came out and started winging it. And B, having watched people like Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes, I mean, he said a lot worse about people. Oh, yeah.
For sure. There was much worse that said during the thing. You know? Right. Like, I mean, like this particular broadcast, which is why, like, it was just sort of like, that's the thing that you're going to, like, die over. I imagine it says a lot more about Will Smith than, like, Jada Pinkett. So,
I did not believe. I was stunned later on to discover that it was not shtick. Because my initial reaction was, for all the reasons I've just given you, my first reaction was, that must have been, like, some bit that wasn't that great. And in a 3-hour show where there are loads of stars tottering out, you know, trying to be funny and not being funny, I'm like, this is just one more unfunny bit in a show that maybe needs to get rid of the bits so it doesn't last 3.5 hours. So I was kind of surprised. And I, to be fair, I didn't know that Will Smith's wife had the condition. So no,
and
I just saw it as a dumb joke, like, blah. I don't know. It was all very...
It's either like a lame joke and it's like, wow, you got a short haircut, or it is like a insensitive, not to be insensitive to the point where anybody gets hit, but like an insensitive joke. Like, why would you, if you knew that was the case, why would you make that joke? It doesn't even really make that much sense because it's not even like a choice at that point.
But also, too, I tend to be unforgiving of the whole thing in general because I'm like, no, that's the game you're all in, right? Like, they all go to the other award shows and some presenter makes cutting comments that are, those are the rules of the game. And if you're really unhappy, you can show it on your face, or you can, you know, like there's plenty of years where they have pictures of celebrities and some guy's making a joke and they're thinking, yeah, that's not funny. I remember when Letterman bombed with the whole Uma Oprah thing. Right. That's 20 years ago. Yeah. Now, what I'm saying is you can easily search the internet for people in the crowd with quizzical or unhappy looks on their faces. I'm like, yeah, that's the game that you're all in. Mm. So for all of a sudden someone to decide that I'm going to go marching up onto the stage, I'm like, oh my gosh.
I was just looking up Entertainment Weekly, at least the website, which, because we know that they don't have a magazine anymore, at least, because they won't be doing the movie previews.
No, we're going to have to do our own research for that.
Somebody there said, an inside source says that joke was not in the script, and so he was ad-libbing something there. So, like, listen, he probably wouldn't know. He looked at this short haircut, he makes this crappy joke, and there you have it.
Well, as Ricky Gervais said the next day on his Twitter feed, I would have just made a joke about the affairs. Like, well, Ricky Gervais is a buddy of Chris Rock, so he's going to stick up for him.
I forget the woman, you know, the three co-hosts, I forget the woman's name. Well, they were all women, but the younger, after not Wanda
Sykes. Schumer, Wanda Sykes, and the other one who I didn't know.
Yeah, the other one, like I said, when she made the jokes about people coming up on stage because they were single, she made a joke about how Will Smith was oh, you know, but I think you're eligible anyway or something like that, which I just took to be like, I'm going to just go overrule this stuff. But a bunch of people afterwards said that what it really was a joke was about their relationship and how she's been like stepping out on him and like, and I'm publicly like, ooh, what, this open so boy, you'd think that would be a more sensitive topic. But I mean, even this joke, I mean, anybody who watched the stuff closely saw he was laughing. And then they cut away, and then suddenly he's walking up there. And so whether he, like, turned to her and she had a bad expression on it, this is why I kind of say it probably says a lot more about their relationship than it does anything about, like, the joke or anything that's normal. Like, so I imagine that's why he's feeling extra embarrassed.
I mean, I tried to have this discussion in the house. She herself has been, and I don't want to make this about people, but they're celebrities, so what do I care? Mm-hmm. She herself has been in an Eddie Murphy movie where the whole shtick is making fun of fat people. So, you know, they're all in a trade where people are dishing it out. Like, that's kind of what it is a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I just... So I think the more interesting thing for me has been, like, even today, there was a news story going, oh, you know, the Academy are going to decide what their punishment is. And I'm sitting there thinking, that's even more moronic. Like, what do you mean his punishment? Like, what, you're not allowed to be in movies? No. So at that moment, really, what's your deal? He's probably going to lose his membership, which means what? He can't vote for best, you know, well, best adapted screenplay? I think he resigned
it or whatever it was, and then I saw something about the resignation. I don't know what it
was.
But
I think
they all realized they look pretty foolish that somebody didn't step in at the time and be like, and like, stop, do something, you know, like, see, you know.
So
they had that mistaken Oscar award, right? And they had to introduce all these new systems. The next time they have this, there's going to be some guy who's in the front row whose job is just to tackle anybody who seems like they're about to do something weird. Yeah, well, I don't. I mean, yeah, not an actual actor. But
well, that's the interesting thing.
Maybe somebody from Ernst & Young accounting firm would be there.
I've enjoyed sort of the very much the inside baseball reaction to it in the days after. Like, mm-hmm. It's like the dude that produced the show apparently has taken two positions. We thought we were going to remove him, but then someone else is claiming, oh no, he told him to stay right there, like, don't remove him. So I felt like there was a whole load of people. I guarantee that within sort of the people who run the whole thing, there was definitely a lot of shock. And then there's always someone quite quick thinking, oh, what can we do out of this to make it? And let's face it, if you're not going to throw him out, then leave him in there to get an award in 10 minutes is wonderful entertainment, right?
Yeah, no, that's kind of crazy.
I hate to say it. And for a TV show that struggles to hold the interest of anyone, and again, apparently the ratings on this thing continue to crater, because it is, it's a tough watch. Yeah. I don't know. I all felt a little bit. And then to hear everyone go, well, you know, we might have to throw him out of the Academy. I'm like, what? Whatever. Like, yeah.
Like, sure, he'll be very upset.
He's still going to make Bad Boys 5. So at that moment, what does it matter? So it is, yeah, I found it all. It was an interesting sort of, I don't know, but I am this way. So again, to now tie this story to another story. So this week, England, in the couple of days before the World Cup draw, played a friendly against Switzerland. So this is two teams that have qualified, you know, going through their places.
And for people who don't know, friendly is basically an exhibition.
Exhibition match. And one of the England players is a guy called Harry Maguire, who is a defender, but he is currently in horrible form for his club team, Manchester United.
His head's square-shaped. Is that the form you mean?
Yes. Well, no, that is his form. But anyway, there was a huge thing in the English media on Thursday because he was booed incessantly by England's fans for the whole game. And even the other players were going, that's disgraceful, you can't do that, what's the matter with people? Everyone was sort of, you know, throwing up their hands about fans and booing your own team and all this sort of thing. I tend to be of the ilk where the dude's getting a whole load of money. Getting booed by fans, that's part of it. Yeah. And so by extension, with the Will Smith thing, for any celebrity, you're a celebrity. If you can't put up being called out in public by a comedian, then hey, Yeah. Get a job at the post office like a whole load of other people who would love to be celebrities. I tend to be quite unforgiving as a person of anyone for whom... I know they're working, but they're getting a whole load of money for working.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, and they're at a level, like they were at a level in the front row. If they were the level of an actor that was in the back of the main section... First of all, nobody would have made the joke about him, right? Like, so don't have, but that's the deal. Is like you're this level, you get the front seat, you get on camera 80 million times, you get all the fawning coverage and the walk-in. So
you're up for an award.
Somebody wants to make a joke about your haircut, it's gonna happen.
I don't know. Yeah, and to your point, I think it's different because the Oscars is this weird thing where, you know, you've got the people down the front, and then they're giving out a whole load of awards to people who we don't know and we don't care about, like regular people. Mm-hmm. So if Chris Rock or anyone was to come on and start ripping into, you know, Joe, assistant editor, right, who this is their only moment in front of the camera, then I'd sit there and go, ooh, that's a bit harsh, right? Because that's just like roasting dudes, like for no apparent reason. But again, if you're a celebrity, I don't know, the rules of the game are already different for you.
Yep. We did have another topic, but
we did.
Let's
fit it in. We haven't done a show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you wanted me to talk about Foo Fighters.
Yes. Well, let's finish with that because that is this was one reason why we didn't do a show last. We were supposed to do a show last week, and then on the eve of the show, the drummer from the Foo Fighters passed, and so we kind of delayed it because I knew that my partner was a big Foo Fighters fan.
No, we did not delay it because...
we delayed it because you didn't have time, but I'm creating a reason why we delayed the show a week.
I was so distraught.
And so I was like, this gives my partner time to maybe come back with, so you know, sort of a Foo Fighters perspective. But you told me in the green room that you might not have a position...
Here, people who have listened enough know I love going to see live music, and I do. I like Foo Fighters, right? And so let me back up for a second. Taylor Hawkins was the drummer.
Right.
He was 50 years old, not totally figured out how he died. And it was in Colombia when they were preparing to have a concert, big festival type of thing, and they were supposed to play. And then a
drug cocktail.
Yeah. Definitely a mixture of drugs. Apparently had this enlarged heart issue, so maybe a combination of whether that was caused by or he had that condition. And you know, taking a bunch of drugs isn't a big deal. Interesting story about him. Like, the amazing thing to think about the Foo Fighters, and this has kind of come back to who the Foo Fighters are, is they were formed in 1994. So, you know, obviously Dave Grohl, known for being the drummer for Nirvana before.
Oh, he was the drummer for Nirvana.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He wasn't a singer. I mean, you know, Cobain was the singer. Yeah. No, he was the drummer. And so that was a 87 to 94 run. So a 7-year run for Nirvana. And now it's been 26 years, you know, of 27 years of Foo Fighters since 94. So it's pretty wild to think about, like, okay, you know, how time flies and people get into different roles. Anyway, at the time, when Dave Grohl first did the album, he just, the first album, or at least the first tapes he was circulating, I can't remember if he ended up doing this on the actual album, was he just played all the parts. And like, so he just was putting it together, his own little project. And
like
then
Phil Collins
doing well. Yeah, exactly. And then when he was like, okay, well, I'm going to take this band on tour and stuff, I need actual band members. And Taylor Hawkins wasn't the original drummer, but I think basically a year after or something like that, the original drummer either left or they kicked him out or whatever it was. And Taylor Hawkins was the drummer for Alanis Morissette. And apparently Dave Grohl called him to get advice on who to find as a drummer. And he was like, well, what about me? You know? And so he joins up with them and, you know, ends up spending the next 20 some odd years. The thing is, I've been to a number of Foo Fighters concerts, and totally respect what they do. I really like Dave Grohl, like as a person. You know, he's, you know, good enough artist, but he's just an interesting person. He's from this area here. Yep. You know, he's really big into roots and of music and trying to keep it accessible to people.
Seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. That's right. But I think we all do that with celebrities. We try and put them in the boxes. Hey, Chris Rock's a cool guy, so I'm going to forgive him for making our comments. Dave Grohl does seem like you know, and especially you've just sort of name dropped his own musical history, you know, yeah, he seems like he's a proper musician, good guy.
Likes Rush. He's a big Rush fan. You know,
like all apparently all he's very approachable.
Yeah.
I've heard that. Very great with the fans. You've seen them a couple of times. Just, you know, regular
dude. And the music, and like, listen, they've got like these sort of classic rock anthems. And they, well, we'll come back to like their role in the rock landscape now in a second. But the thing about it is, even though I like it, I've got one album I got, you know, and I listened to a bunch in the early, in the mid 90s or something like that, or late 90s. I would never be motivated enough to go buy another album. Like I'm gonna hear enough songs on the radio, whatever it is, and it's not, the music has never been like, wow, that's amazing. Like I've never like been blown away by it. It's like super duper well done rock, and it's fun to see a concert. You know, they go to town, they're doing the whole rock thing, they do lots of fun things where they'll change it up, and you know, they always had a bit where he would switch, like Dave Grohl would switch into the drums and Taylor Hawkins would come out from behind the drums and sing a song. And you know, when we saw him at one big venue, they had a lighting rig that was set up in a way they could drop the top way down low, all the lights way down low, so it literally would be like they're in a tiny club even though they're in this middle of a stage, because the lights would be like 6 feet over their head, you know, instead of being way, way up in the rafters. All kinds of cool stuff like that. But it's never, and I'm enjoying the show, but I've never been like so motivated. So like, I think you had asked me like, oh, you know, I could pull up some of your favorite songs and put the clips on and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, meh, you know, I'm not going to be like, it's not like people have heard me before talking about like little moments in a song where I'm like, that part is amazing or that sound is amazing or what they're doing there. And I've never had that for them. So like, it's nothing bad about them, but it's just not, it's not as emotionally moving, you know, what they do. And and maybe part of this is they have gotten, and he in particular, like the role of like the soul of all rock that's left over. Like, you know, we're all past this and this other thing. And so, well, you need rock, you go to Dave Grohl. But the thing is, there's lots of bands out there that rock, you know, and like, so leaving it like Foo Fighters is like the last bastion in the holder of rock is, I think, kind of nonsense. And it's such a well-produced, put-together version. It's really a little less rock than it ought to be, right? Like, I mean, I'm overstating my case here because I don't feel this strongly about it, but it's like a little bit of nostalgia for nostalgia's sake, or almost like a Disneyfication of the rock, where it's it is a real rock thing. But
Dave Grohl is definitely.
I sound like I dislike them, but I don't.
Yeah, Dave Grohl is now definitely an elder statesman,
right?
Right, and I think that, you know, part of this too is, so you know, I made the crack about, you know, Phil Collins, but I think Genesis just played their last ever live concert. I just read that somewhere. So, and there is actually a great, like, I ran into a great documentary on PBS, can't remember what it's called, with Genesis about preparing and rehearsals for their last ever tour. And I thought that it was really interesting. Obviously, Phil Collins has, you know, the different illnesses where he has to sit, and you know, he's got, but I do think it, you know, to talk about Dave Grohl and what everything you've just said, that there does come that moment, and we are in that moment where, you know, there's this kind of generation that are done. Like, I hear the Who are touring again. Now, I can't imagine, why would anyone want to do that? Why would you want to pay the money to go and do that unless you're someone who just hasn't seen them and wants to check it off the box? Right. But I do think this is a constant thing. And you know, you equate it, you know, I equate these things to the Oscars and all this stuff in entertainment. The wheel does turn. And so, you know, Dave Grohl, he's now an elder statesman. And in a strange way, once you attain that status, whether it's something you wanted or not, they just get, you know, I mean, you said yourself, yeah, you know, there's plenty of rockers out there. Yeah, it's a solid concert. Sounds great. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. There's a part of me going, but that's fine.
Because that's why, like, I don't know, it'll come out like I'm against them.
No. And like, I wasn't suggesting
that. But I assume there are people like that who would say that perspective. But I just think it's not, I'm getting invested enough. I'm not excited enough about it to be like, oh, you know, major loss to whatever it is. And the fact that it's like almost surprising to me that it's been this many years is sort of a testament to that, though, even though there's like a certain number of songs that we all know, Everlong and, you know, Learn to Fly and stuff like that. But it's not, you know.
I mean, to give the drummer his due, you know, it does appear that, you know, he's going to go down in history as another one of those guys, you know, yeah. Right? And I don't mean to be mean when I say that. But then there was a part of me going, wow, wasn't he a bit old for all of that anyway, right? It was all a bit.
I've been watching it a little bit at a time when I'm, like, working out. I don't know if you ever seen the Woodstock movie.
Yeah.
I forget what, you know. And so the director's cut was on Turner Classic Movies or something. And so I recorded in Fortune. I'm very upset at myself. I recorded in standard definition somehow. So it's like this tiny blurry version. But we used to, myself and some of our common friends that we know in common from how we even met each other in the first place, used to, and that gang of friends from high school used to have a videotape of the movie. The short, this is the director's cut, so it's like 3 hours and 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Which we should come back to one of the people involved in the production in a second, but we used to have the shorter version on a videotape and we'd play it all the time, and I hadn't really listened to it, and it's amazing to see, like, the passion people had for the, like, you had a bunch of people pull together a concert that got completely overrun. It was kind of a nightmare in terms of, like, hazards and things like that, but you watch the actual musicians up there in front of 500,000 people and you're like, they're unbelievably invested and they kind of don't know what's going on. Like Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young, without Neil Young, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, it was them, and it was like they barely ever played together. They've been in a bunch of bands before, but they did barely ever played together, and here they are, like, you know, closing down a set in the middle of the night, and Jimi Hendrix, all these things that are just so legendary and loose and, like, rock and roll, and that's not what you see in a Foo Fighters concert, you know, when you pay a fortune and everything's going to be exactly 2 hours long or whatever their set list is, and, you know.
But that's also part of us as a society, though. That's kind of where we are.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything has to be, I don't know, everything has to fit. I mean, again, you know, we spent a lot of talk, you know, we've talked about the World Cup. And, you know, watching soccer now is a very different experience than it was when I was a kid.
Like, you know, there's certainly alternative fringes in our culture.
Sure.
But they've been really much more, where the idea of an alternative taking over in the way that it did in the 60s or so, you know, like that, it's the they'd be so quickly co-opted by the corporate interests and all the, you know, all the people who just want to exploit it to the most extent possible, that it's almost impossible for it to have a real,
it is quite
ground movement, you know.
You do get to a level where, unfortunately, it all is quite homogenized. I don't know if that's the right word. Do you know what I mean? Because again, because you go and I don't. So I'm now going to say this. Because you have gone regularly, it has been much easier for you to come to this conclusion than for someone like me, because I don't go.
Right.
You just say Foo Fighters to me, and it is conjuring up thoughts of the 90s and Trailblazers and these guys. And again, if that's your only, you know, once an anarchist, always an anarchist. Do you know what I mean? So for me, And selling out is the wrong word, because I'm not suggesting that's what they've done. They're just like all these bands. I name-checked The Who earlier. You just get older. It is become what it becomes. It's interesting, you know, because I don't go and don't care enough, I'm not let down. What I mean is, in my mind, Dave Grohl, the Foo Fighters, all those guys, They are sort of compartmentalized and locked in a period of history where, I get to say, oh, wow, yeah, those guys. Man, I remember being that age when all those guys were on the scene. And because I myself have moved on or never really been as close to it, my relationship with it, you know, from your perspective, you can sit back and go, yeah, you know, it's a solid show. It is what it is. Still great. And maybe in a way, I don't know if seeing, does when you see them, when you see them now, does it ever affect how you feel about their music from before? Can you fall out of love with them a little bit?
No, I mean,
I'm not going to suffer.
I wasn't in love with him
right.
in the first place. Okay. You know, like that's right. the thing. Right. So like, it wasn't much of a thing there. I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, it's, they, what also what annoys me, and this may be a tangent, is that, like, what happened to bands that, like, sound changed over the course of years, right? Like, what happened to a band that, like, oh, you know, they were doing this at the beginning, and then it became different. And, you know, the Rolling Stones have gone through lots of different sounds, you know, over the years. Yeah. And you know, the Beatles certainly, like, was most morphed from, like, you know,
right.
little garage bandy trio to, like, all kinds of things that they did.
The aforementioned
foursome.
Genesis.
That's right. We go trio foursome. But yeah, like go through a lot of these things. But you know, now literally would you be like late period Foo Fighters, earlier period Foo Fighters? Like, is there a difference? I don't think there's a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's just, I don't think bands metamorphosize anymore, though, do they, in that way? I think it...
I mean, most of them don't last that long is the one thing.
Yeah, they don't last that long.
U2 certainly changed sounds 18 million times, you know. But you know, like, there's no... What band can we think of that's, you know, popular enough to be paying attention to have a 20-year run?
I also don't think that... Because it's unabashedly a business now, I don't think bands... get to change in the way
they're all the smallest bands are just getting killed by all the other systems here.
Yeah, everything about the marketplace is all much more controlled than it ever was even 30 years ago. I mean, if you think about it, you know, the Foo Fighters perhaps do represent, at least from a rock perspective, they do represent like one of the last moments of like a big creative wave crashing ashore where you go, wow, this is different. Do you know what I mean? Like there, I mean, I'm now old enough where there are sort of certain moments. Like I remember punk rock. I remember punk rock in the late 70s and what it spawned in terms of rock music. And I think, you know, grunge was what, mid to late 90s?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't think of anything else that's come along since then that is perhaps...
Early 90s, really, but yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm kind of unconvinced now that as a medium, that can even happen. We've sort of got to this place where it's... What's that old saying by the Jam? The public get what the public want. The public want what the public get. It's all kind of pre-packaged. I mean, again, you know, you talked about the experience of watching the Foo Fighters in the flesh now, but that's not something that's unique to them. Everything is like that now, right? That's what it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, you know, people know I like some other bands, you know, Fish and things like that, but that's unique in its own right because it's a different, like, there's nobody's overproducing that thing. There's nobody like, because right. Nobody sees an opportunity to polish it down to nothingness.
Yes.
No. I'm hearing a lot of geese in my backyard.
Oh, so that could be a sign. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, are they going to replace him? I mean, I know they've sort of abandoned the tour for the moment, but do you think this might sort of be it? And Dave Grohl will just do things like a Jack White does things? I don't know. Yeah, I mean... And to be fair, it doesn't sound like it really matters.
It's not needed, right? Like, that's the
right,
thing.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to keep doing what he does. It's, you know, like, this is really his thing anyway to begin with, you know.
I mean, again, and it does come a third thing. Do you want to keep limping? You know, I do give, you know, when my mom was here, bless her, she was talking about, she made a decision after the last time she saw the Stones that she was never going to see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And again, she's been on this podcast talking about her experiences back in the 60s seeing the Stones. And, you know, I do sort of, to your point, the Stones they've been, chameleon's the wrong word, but they have adapted and tried and done new things. So, yeah, you know, that is now their thing. I do question why the Who are giving it another go other than the money.
Yeah, I don't even... It's one of those bands that when I see them doing things now, I'm not sure they're really enjoying it at all. It's like when I saw, like, there was a fun, I mean, it's been a few years now, but like this weird summer where, Springsteen, The Police, and Van Halen were all on tour. And, like, the Van Halen one in particular was literally, and some Police to a certain extent, were like, what's the point, folks? You know, like, I get it. I mean, it sounds decent, but it doesn't sound like you're really invested in it, you know.
I think bands go through three stages, don't they? They go through the stage where they arrive, and in terms of their relationship with their audience, they arrive and people love them. Then they try to change, and their fans just want them to keep doing what they've done. And then if you hang around long enough, you go out on tour and you're just playing the old stuff. You become a tribute act to yourself. I cannot imagine the Who, and they're just going to run. They're going to sign. I'm putting a boot into a band that I shouldn't be doing, because that's a part of my sort of youth culture. But they're just going to play all the stuff that we know. You become a greatest hits band.
I don't think that even counts, like, because they're so old. Like, you know,
no, I know. I'm being slightly extreme there, but
yeah. We've already run over. I don't have enough time to try to dissect that and figure out what it is.
No, I'll be for another show.
It's the opposite. Nobody changes anymore. So maybe that's the solution they've come up with. I don't have to worry about playing the oldies, because I'm essentially writing new songs that are basically oldies. And so it doesn't really matter what I play. It's all the same stuff.
There you go. Mm-hmm. That's a piece of wisdom. I'm writing new stuff that's oldies. There's a piece of wisdom for us to leave on. Right?
Yeah.
All right.
That's why we're going to start just doing our old episodes over again. They'll be remakes. It'll be the Atlantic Voice remakes.
Yeah. We should try and find... Well, of course, you never listen to the show, so you don't have any internal catalog.
That's right.
It'll be new to me. Yeah.
Next time we get to a holiday party, that's what we'll have to do.
All right. This has been the Atlantic Voice. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.